in Ziploc that. Right on my waistline is why I kept that strap. I remember nights, I didn't remember nights. I damn near went crazy, I had to get it right. Now I'm your favorite rapper's favorite rapper. Hey, now I'm your favorite trapper's favorite trapper. The absolute truth, yeah, no joke. Who me, I emerged from the crack.
Welcome everybody. This is the first episode of the Trap Draw Podcast. I'm Randy. I'm joined on the blower by Tron Carter. Tron, how are you?
Randall, I'm great. Long time coming. Glad we could finally put this together. A couple
no
of
doubt.
Apathetic individuals trying to put together a podcast is a pretty Herculean feat.
No, I can't believe it. We got this thing up in the air. We have achieved takeoff. I think we have a good show on tap. I'm excited. It's British Open week. We are recording this on a Sunday evening, so we just got a little bit of a nice preview this weekend with the Scottish Open, and we will turn our attentions to Royal Troon for the Open Championship.
When was the last time the British there? Like 12, 13 years ago? It's been
a
bit, right?
12 years, yeah, 2004.
Win the date with Todd Hamilton?
Yeah, win a major with Todd Hamilton. I think something near and dear to your heart, and certainly something I'm interested in. NBC has the coverage for this year's Open, and they are rolling out 49 and a half hours of live golf. So to put that in perspective, I think I read the Masters shows about 28 and a half hours of live golf. The PGA Championships, I think 32 and a half I read. The U.S. Open, a little bit more than that. But the point being, we're going to get a ton of live golf. I think NBC and the Golf Channel are essentially showing complete coverage. So first ball in the air to the last group tapping in. I think that'll be good as you know, golf junkies. I'm looking forward to that. And the other, you know, new face on with the NBC Golf will be Mike Tirico coming over from ESPN.
Oh, so I forgot about that.
Yeah, so as I understand it, he's going to be the studio host. And
okay. So he's going to be the one that just kills time during rain delays and shit.
Yeah, yeah. And then Johnny and Dan are going to be the lead analysts, and you know, they're going to have the usual cast and crew out on the course and everything.
And then Jimmy Roberts is going to be just getting sappy with it.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I'm Johnny doing the British is sweet. Hopefully he's got some stories. You know, I mean, I don't think there's a 63 out there, but hopefully Johnny, you know, hopefully he's as salty, not bitter, but just salty as self. You know, that's
I don't know if he can step into that role. Yeah, he's kind of like, you know, the blustery, maybe maladjusted American. I don't know if that's him or not, but
is he the ugly American?
You know, maybe I could see that, but I don't know how he is in real life. I wouldn't mind him going off on, you know, some riffs and just laying into Scottish culture, cuisine, what have you.
I don't think the guy understands Scottish culture because he doesn't drink.
I didn't know that
period,
about him.
Period, point blank.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Doesn't drink at all. No, he's mega Mormon.
Is he recovering?
Or no, he's just crazy Mormon.
Oh, okay.
It's like him and Daniel Summerhays, and that's about it. And they're just going to They're gonna do them,
hey,
but they do it well.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I'm not. Hey, this is judgment free.
JFV, judgment free zone here.
Yeah. So yeah, as mentioned, this will be first Open at Troon specifically since 2004. I think you know, I was looking back over. There were kind of a couple dark years there. 2004 being one of them with Todd Hamilton, and the year prior, Ben Curtis came from nowhere and
I
declare a jug.
Yeah. And
but
honestly, 2003, tragic. Mike Weir, Sean McKeel, Ben Curtis. Can't remember who won the U.S. Open.
Jurek won the U.S. Open in 2003.
Fuck. Even worse.
He's your boy. I thought he was your boy.
Yeah, I hate him, though.
No, I thought you had to come to Jesus with him.
Yeah, but I hated him back in that moment.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
So Tiger reeled off a couple. Potty won a couple. And then Stuart Sink got one in there, or Tom Watson.
Yeah, he just shot on all of our dreams.
Yeah.
Like the most devastating, shittiest thing anybody ever could have done is win the British Open in a playoff like that. Just disgraceful. Even Ted Turner was upset.
Yeah, he was bullying the elderly. Not cool.
He was like the guy, he was like Ben Stiller and Happy Gilmore. Can we talk about Todd Hamilton at Muirfield?
At Muirfield?
Yeah, not like the real Muirfield, like Muirfield Village.
Oh, yeah. You want to tell the story?
I don't even know how to tell the story. It was surreal. I mean, the guy was, he was totally just, he shat all over this kid's spirit. And he asked
the kid a question.
Yeah.
Well, the kid was looking for like a ball or a glove, you know, something.
This was behind the ninth green, I think.
Yeah, I think he was coming off the course. He must have started on the back.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, Mr. Hamilton. Yeah, hey, Mr. Hamilton, can I get a ball or can I get a glove? And then Todd, like without missing a beat, went, goes right up to him. I forget the question he asked him. There was like something.
He was like, what's 6 plus 79 times 33? Or something, just some crazy.
Yeah. It was a really involved math question. I heard involved math. And the kid obviously got it wrong. I mean, I think he was like, what's going on? And then.
Yeah, I mean, the kid was like in second grade. I mean, it was almost obscene how mean he was to this kid.
Well, he goes, and then, yeah, he just gives him a. So the kid guesses, and he's like, that's wrong. And just walks away. And
but he said, no. He said, he was like, what's 16 plus 24 plus 13 plus 17 times 42 plus 48 times 69? And the kid just literally, like, burst out into tears. And he acted like he was going to flip him the ball.
I thought he did. He ended up flipping him the ball. He had, like, walked away and then
he
turned around
and
rolled it back to him.
Yeah, but he, like, pocketed it first and the kid started crying.
Right.
And then he flipped him the ball. And it was the most cold-blooded thing I've ever seen in my life.
It was pretty cool. And I think a little bit is on the kid for breaking down so easily. He's
Yeah.
It's not a good look.
Just disgraceful. Anyway.
So, yeah, that's our Todd Hamilton story. all right, who do you like to win it?
Sergio.
All right, me too. Next topic!
And then DJ is probably going to come in second, and then hopefully Angel Cabrera.
It's the wind blowing.
Yeah.
I don't.
Hopefully the conditions just suck.
Do we know, is Angel in the British Open?
I don't know.
Is that a stupid question?
No, that's an extremely good question. But at some point, I don't know. I feel like that guy's going to win the career Grand Slam at some point. Like, he might win the PGA Championship at 57.
Yeah.
You know? And he's just hasn't played competitive golf in 6 years, and he's just been hanging out with, like, Argentinian gauchos, you know, wrangling up good red meat. But at some point, he's gonna win the career Grand Slam.
So he's not in the British Open.
He's not at all?
No.
That's bullshit.
He's not in it. And I'll say this. If and when he does complete the career Grand Slam, his win at the Greenbrier is going to be the most tragic occurrence in maybe the history of golf.
If we could strike that from the history books.
Yeah.
And just only have
career wins each major.
Yeah.
Call it a career.
Sorry, Kenny Perry. Sorry about you. Or if you're going to win the Greenbrier, you got to win the Mayakoba, Reno, and John Deere as well.
That would be golf's ultimate jewel.
That's essentially the second Grand Slam.
Yeah. How do you think Spieth will fare this week?
I don't know, man. I think I'm kind of torn on Spieth. I think he's like the best player of his generation. He's a total savage, but at the same time, he kind of stinks. And I feel like Lydiko is kind of the same thing. Like they're generational players, but tee to green they stink.
I don't think Lydiko really does stink tee to green though. I don't think Spieth does either.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like Spieth sometimes he'd be better served on the LPGA tour, hitting stroke down, you know, nine woods from the rough than he is competing with the big boys like DJ.
Yeah, I think you may have just charted into or wandered into uncharted territory. I'm not sure really how to respond.
Sorry, I'm not sorry.
What about Jay Day? Aren't you a big Jason Day fan?
I think Jay Day might. Did he already pull out of the Olympics?
Yeah.
I think he might already have Zika. So, all right, here's my question.
Yeah.
First of all, why does the Olympics suck? And second of all, who is going to announce that they have Zika?
To your second question, I don't know. That certainly is maybe the lead storyline.
Or are they just not going to announce it? Like, it's just like, if somebody gets Zika, they're not going to say it.
I hope, you know what they should do? They should go to Shipnuck for an exclusive and let Shipnuck write it up.
That guy's been about as gung-ho as possible.
I think he got greased by somebody down in Argentina. I think he's on the tape.
I think Juan Antonio Samaranch gave him about $4,000 and said, hey, Shippy, we got a couple glowing articles about us. That was what I think happened.
I don't understand it. I count on that guy for his cynicism, and it's just he's been letting me down. But yeah, if somebody has Zika.
So you know what else I think? All right. So before we get back to Jason Day and anybody Olympics wise, I do think it's funny that none of the women who actually create bait have withdrawn from Rio.
Yeah, so what I've heard that it's much more prestigious opportunity for the women, but. I think it just comes back to, dude, the guys that are pulling out have all the money, and it's a pain to fly down to Rio, and if they don't
it's a pain to fly private down to Rio.
Well, and then you got to worry about logistics, and I'm sure they're hearing it's not safe down there. I think that it's just easier to skip it.
I don't know, man. I mean, all right, let's say Jay Spencer withdraws, all right?
Has he? We're recording this Sunday night.
No, I
haven't heard.
Yeah, he has not withdrawn yet. I think the deadline, you said the deadline was probably nine minutes ago. I don't think he's going to withdraw. I'm surprised Ricky's playing, but I don't think he's going to withdraw because he's too busy pushing diabetes on little kids with Coca-Cola. Sorry, that's a mega hot take. That's like magma. But at the end of the day, I would like to see Spieth withdraw because I want to see Kuchar in the opening ceremonies.
He would be like a kid at Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, like he's going to show up 3 days early. He's going to play ping pong with the Chinese national team in the Olympic Village. He's going to be draped an American flag the whole time with that dumbass smile on his face. And, it's going to be like, opening ceremony. Here's Matt Kuchar. He's a golfer, and he'll be holding it. He'll have like an American flag fanny pack on, just waving at the crowd.
All right. So let's go from the Olympics.
So Randall. Let me bring up Richard Flower.
Ricky Fowler?
No, Richard Flower. The Rictator?
The Rictator. I give him a lot of credit. He may be just bathing in money every night, but at some point he slayed the dragon a little bit at the Players' level.
I mean, yeah, he won the Players. Like, Hal Sutton won the Players. You know,
Craig Burks also won the Players.
Craig Burks won the Players. It was, I don't know. Yeah, it was good, and obviously the timing, kind of the week after he was named the most overrated player on tour. The timing worked. I think people are way out over their skis on Mr. Fowler.
Richard Fowler?
Not my cup of tea. I, you know, the orange.
Do you think it was rigged? Do you think the Players Championship in 2015 was rigged by Tim Fincham?
No, he made some golf shots coming down the stretch. I was rooting for Kisner, though. He made some shots. He kept stuffing the pinata on 17. I do remember that. But, yeah, it's, you know, I think he's a guy. He's had a good career. I mean, very good career relative to all professional golfers.
Is he just another guy, though?
He's just another guy. He's just another guy. Yeah, no thanks.
Jag.
I'm good.
Just
I'm good.
Another guy.
Yeah, I'm good. I just keep waiting for him to do something. And, you know, everybody started trying to put him in, like, the Big Four. It's like, come on, it's not there. Like, you got to let him – you got to let the results fall him up there. And winning one Players isn't going to do it. He's had some other good wins, whatever.
All right, so at some point – what, he finished top five in all four majors, though?
Yeah, he had a good year. He's got a bank one, man. I mean,
so
I don't
some
know.
Point,
he's going to have a Davis Love III career, right? He's going to win, like, 15 times with one major. Right? Isn't that where we're headed?
Lose to Holly, though? Holly's sweet.
I just feel like that's where we're headed. And he's going to sell a buttload of orange merchandise, and now he's pushing joggers at me. And I don't want it. I don't like it. Not
fair.
For me.
That's fair.
I think you should drop the IE. I think you should go by Rick. Time.
I think you should go by Richard.
But I say all that, and I think he actually is a good
or
dude.
Or Ricardo.
Like, I
yeah.
actually think he's
oh, I think
fun to hang out
really
with.
Good dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is strictly just golf speak.
I would rather hang out with him than Jay Spencer.
I think I'm having a beer with Speed. But maybe they'll invite us to 2K17, and we can have a beer with both of them next year. All right, last guy. Will you be happy, sad, or ambivalent if Jason Day wins the British Open?
Sad.
Okay, why?
Are you an NFL fan?
You know, I'm becoming less and less of one, in all
okay.
honesty. But yeah,
you're a
sure,
Bengals
play
guy,
along.
Right?
Yeah, I'm a Bengals.
You're a Bengals guy.
Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah.
So, Bengals have lost to the Houston Texans, what, two of the last 3 years in the playoffs?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I might be making that up, but I also hate Andy Dalton. So, that's, you know, that's just kind of me. Projecting my feelings there, but
I can't. Who did the Bengals lose to last year? I forget that.
Steelers, right?
Oh yeah. I'm joking. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how you could have forgotten that one. Pac-Man, we all do. But I'll say this: I think Jason Day and J.J. Watt are the same person. I think it's disgusting. I think they're both. They are the biggest humble braggers. It just makes me sick to my stomach. Where he feels, I get the sense that Jason Day is actually a good guy. My uncle's a member of Muirfield. My aunt practices next to him all the time and says, "Oh, I love Jason Day." All this shit. Well, you know what? Like, I'm tired of hearing about Jason Day's fictitious injuries and ailments and all the drama. I don't even give a shit if you're hurt or not. Just don't talk about it, you know? Shove it in your back pocket, go out and play, and then at some point I'm not one of those guys that's going to dog you for not talking to the media or not giving us interesting tidbits, you know? So,
I think he can be interesting without. He just always seems like
everything.
He always like uses it as a crutch. I don't know. Maybe that's.
I don't enjoy it when Jason Day, like at the Canadian Open last year or 2 years ago, hit a 365 or 375 yard drive, and then when, but at the same time, when DJ does it, I'm like, man, that was majestic and artistic. So long and live and languid, like that was just cool.
Well, I think what we're kind of trying to say is, what I found to be a trustworthy tool is, I always try to think about like how much would Jim Nantz, like how much does Jim Nantz actually like a person, you know? And I feel like my affection for that person, affection is not the right word, whether or not I like that person is definitely inversely related to how Jim Nantz would feel about that person. I mean, he's just he loves the story and he just eats it up, and
he's like, oh, Jim, let me provide you with the narrative.
Yeah,
you know?
Jim loves that, and Jason Day loves it. He loves being talked
about. And it's
like,
I want to like Jason Day. He's got this great backstory, and he's Australian, and he's got a great accent, and he seems like a genuinely decent guy to have a beer with. But at the end of the day, it's like, you're making it really hard for me right now. You're acting like a fluffer.
Well, hey, let's before we kind of introduce our guest and get to that, let's quickly, what are some of the more indelible British Open memories that you have personally? Any come to mind right away? I mean, what are we?
Yeah, probably Stuart Sink shitting on everybody's dream.
Okay, yeah.
When he beat Watson, that was bullshit. Other than that, I don't know why, but Tom Lehman back in 96, I think, it with him in St. Anne's. I don't know if it was just that Tudor-style clubhouse or what, but that one kind of stuck out to me. And then probably Cat in 2000 at St. Andrews.
Yeah. That was kind of a seminal win for him.
How about you?
Yeah, I think my first memory really is Rocca putting from the Valley of Sin and John Daly obviously going on to win.
In that Reebok sweatshirt.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I think more recently, I think I always kind of remember the Mickelson win just because I'm an unabashed lefty fan and his play down the stretch of Muirfield. And I think, you know, the one that everyone remembers is 99 with Vandal. I mean, I think that when I hear the words British Open, I picture Vandeveld in the berm with his shoes off. And that was maybe the most surreal golf viewing experience I think I've had. I mean, I'm trying to think.
Well, some of it's due to the time slot, right? Like you're sitting there watching it all morning. You wake up at 7 or 8 or 9 o'clock, and you watch it for 4 or 5 hours and have breakfast and some eggs and some ham and whatever else. And Vandeveld's leading this entire time, right?
Yeah, playing amazing golf.
Flawless
in
golf.
Treacherous conditions.
Yeah, at Carnoustie, nonetheless.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
and
was
goes
that
in,
was
obviously 18 three-shot lead, and you know, I think you said, you know, that putt for triple bogey is, I mean, that wasn't a gimme. He freaking rolled it in. I don't know.
Yeah, an 8 to 10 footer. I mean, shit, he got up and down on the bunker, 8 to 10 footer, dead center, and then he just fist pumped the shit out of it.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, that probably took more cogs than any winning putt of all time. You know, that was.
It's.
That
I
was,
mean,
Yeah, that was big no time.
Joke. No joke. Yeah. And obviously he folded in the playoff and Paul Lowry won. And I think Paul Lowry has to be the most, I don't know, maybe Steve Jones when he won the U.S. Open. I'm trying to think of two more forgettable major winners. But Vandeveld will continue to be the lasting image from not only the 1999 British Open, but I think, you know, kind of what the British Open is, and for a lot of, at least Americans, or at least a lot of people our age.
Yeah, if I was gonna pick out, say, 30 names, Paul Lowry wouldn't be one of the first 30 names you associate with the British Open.
Yeah.
The Open Championship.
The Open Championship, yeah. No chance.
But John Vandeveld would probably be one of the first five or six names you associated with it. And yet he didn't win.
Yeah.
And that says something. I think he was kind of frozen in time for, you know, at least for us in that generation where, you know, I was 13 or 14 years old watching that. And that was, you know, that was kind of one of the things where the guy, you know, the guy pissed away a major championship and then handled it with complete class. And
yeah, I'm glad you said that. I think that's, and I even remember vaguely kind of having that thought in real time was, wow, this guy should be absolutely crushed. And, you know, I'm sure he was, but he didn't really let that on. And I don't think he ever really tried to hide from that moment. And we'll talk about it, and it's very open and honest and thoughtful. And I don't know, that's very cool. It'd be so easy to be a different way, and he's not. He's handled it like a true gentleman, and frankly, like a true champion. Even though, you know, he doesn't and will never have his name on the claret jug.
So anyway, if you haven't guessed it yet. Our guest is John Vandeveld.
Yeah, so we thought we'd bring him on and catch up with him. And so Tron and I had about a 30-35-minute talk with him. He has just begun the second phase of his golf career. We caught him this weekend. He was making his Champions Tour debut up at the Dick's Senior Open in New York. And was kind enough to we caught him after his second round. And he sat down and spent 35 minutes talking about a variety of things with us. So anything you want to add, Tron, before we...
No, that's it. Super, super gracious at this time. And I was more interested in what he's done after Carnesi and how he rebounded from that than what actually happened. Because I don't think we'd be covering any new ground if we just asked him about that. So.
Yeah, and I think that was our thinking was, hey, let's try to give an image of what he's been up to. Let's, you know, not that people will ever forget 1999, but, you know, let's give some people other things to think about when they hear that name. So I hope we've done that, and thank everybody for tuning in. First of what we hope will be many great episodes to come. And without further ado, here is our conversation with John Vandeveld.
How does it feel to be back in competition? I know 75, 74, probably not exactly what you're hoping for, but just being back out there.
Exactly. Well, the scores, you know, it was always going to be something to look at, but to be really honest, it's the first time that I played with a scorecard in my pocket since 2011. So it's been a while. So and since 2011, basically, I've had 10 rounds of golf on a yearly basis. So it's been a busy time of my life doing other things, and you know what, I knew it that I missed the adrenaline of competing, and I was always gonna come back sooner or later. So so getting back here on the golf course that I, you know, first time I see it, obviously you got to hit it pretty straight. The greens are, you know, the course is immaculate. I mean, the fairways are firm. The greens are firm as well and fast, so it was always going to be a process where, you know, it's about grinding it out and improving a little bit day by day. So today I was 2 under through 8. I started on 10, Even yesterday I was okay, but I couldn't, you know, I couldn't close it out. Double bogey 15, basically, which put me at 3 over par. And today I was 2 under playing 18, and then I hit too many loose shots as well. So, you know, in and out, I know what's going on in the swing and what's wrong. So it was just a great process. I chipped and putt pretty well today. I putted very well yesterday. At least I had the speed of the greens because I never hit it very close. And now it's just going to be a matter of being patient and putting competitive runs together.
Was some of it endurance related too? Just as far as not having played consecutive rounds?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I played in both of the programs as well, so that was my fourth consecutive round today.
That's almost a full year for you. Yeah,
exactly. That's pretty. That's 40% of what I do in a year. So I felt, you know, it's very, very warm as well. So altogether, you know, physically, I'm weaker than I was. There's no doubt. And when you're not physically spot on, it's pretty hard to grind it out all the time. So nothing surprising, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I'm actually surprised I was in the par and feeling comfortable today. And you know what? I think that's what I'm going to concentrate on.
Good. I know.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. Just reading your transcript from earlier this week, you had mentioned, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you hope to. It seemed like maybe not full time, but playing, you know, 15 to 20 senior events. And I was just wondering if you could talk about maybe what your plan is for the rest of this year, schedule-wise, and then going forward into next year.
Well, as you know, I'm playing on invite. So I've, you know, requested invites pretty much everywhere until the end of the year.
Okay.
And then with the thought of entering the tour school. So obviously, you know what, if I can grab a spot before that, I would be delighted. But
yeah,
I don't want to put too much pressure either. It's as I said, it's been a long time away from competing. All those guys have been playing day in, day out, and they never stopped. So for a lot of them, so it's just trying to get some pressure out of my shoulders. My intention is, you know, to be full steam somewhere along by the end of next year. I'd like to be on the tour, on the Champions Tour, and. As I said, you know, I like to play between 15 and 20 weeks. I still have other occupations that I don't want to turn my back to.
Mm-hmm.
And I still believe that I can, you know, dedicate well enough time in the week to playing competitive golf and to practice my game. So
always the plan for you?
It was always in the back. Yeah, in the back of my head, it was always a plan to come back and compete, no doubt. Now, you know, do I want to go back and compete with a 20-year-old? The answer is no, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's a different exercise, and it as well, it's a different atmosphere. So, you know, coming here, I think it will suit more my personality and more myself as a person as well, which is great.
Is there a reason why you chose to the U.S. Senior Tour as opposed to staying in Europe?
Well, I think there's much more tournaments.
Okay,
that's number one. Number two, I do believe that, you know, I haven't played on any Senior Tour in Europe, so I can't really comment right now on the conditions and on everything else, but. Here, you know, I played on the PGA Tour for a couple of years, and it's very similar the way that the players are taken care of. So
mm-hmm.
I have to say that, you know, I rather follow the good weather as well. You know, my body is not 21 anymore, so it takes less time to loose up. I do believe it suits my game. You know, I hit a pretty high ball. I'm pretty good around the greens, I was pretty good around the greens, and I know this part of my game, you know, they're still going to remain. So it's just a matter of taking the dust out and, as I said, be patient and work out of it.
As far as coming back after such a long competitive layoff, what's the toughest thing to get back? Just the your touch around the greens and more your
definitely from, you know, from 40 yards till 120 yards, which is actually what you need here. In terms of how deep the shots are that I hit. I mean, I had a 88-yard shot today that I carried 92. I mean, this is, you know, this is not going to help. So basically, you turn yourself an amazing, you know, opportunity to hit it close and to have a birdie chance into trying not to three-putt. So,
yeah.
So it's, again, you know, I think the biggest thing for me, the biggest challenge, you know, I'm patience is a virtue, I know, but I'm not the most patient man in the world, and it will be to, you know, not to be too hard on myself, to accept that it's going to take some time, and to move on with that. Still to be, you know, pretty, I'll be pretty demanding on what I'm going to do and what I'm working on, but at the same time, acceptance is the biggest thing.
Kind of sounds like Tiger Woods.
I don't know if it sounds like Tiger Woods, but at the end of the day, you know, if I would have practiced for, let's say, or played golf, you know, 4 hours a day for the last 6 years, pretty much, you know, 30 weeks or 40 weeks a year, I would not say that. It's been the other way around. I've been working for 40 weeks a year, 45 weeks a year, doing other things, and I, you know, your body, no matter what, you know, you get older, it takes its toll. It's physically as well. I'm not half as strong as what I used to be. I'm not saying I hit it short, but I'm, you know, resistance-wise, it's you still have to walk, you know, 10 kilometers a day. You still have to hit some balls. It's really a physical exercise, a big one.
Mm-hmm.
So. The fact that I haven't seen the gym for the last 6 years doesn't really help.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as day job, you were kind of talking about that a little bit. Is that the tournament director?
Yeah, I actually, you know, I'm basically, I run the golf department in the company that I work for. So we obviously have the French Open, the male French Open. We have the ladies as one. We have Challenge Tour tournament. We have second grade, you know, tour as well. So in and out, we have 6 tournaments that we take care of, and that takes a lot of my time.
Okay.
Obviously.
Well, I know this year's French Open field was very strong. Rory McIlroy played over there. I'm sure, was that rewarding for you to kind of, a lot of your efforts come to fruition?
Satisfying. Yes, because over the last 5 years, you know, the product itself as a French Open, you know, what's offered to the spectator has really improved. The village has improved. You know, we have facilities where people can hit balls on the range, you know, where they can have club fitting, where they can. So all this has been, you know, we're still working on it. But it's been moving gradually, and the field as well. If you look at over the years, you know, it's been improving as well. So this year being the 100th anniversary and the 100th French Open, we were delighted to have the likes of the McIlroy and the Danny Willett and, you know, the Westwood and the Kaimers and the McDowell and the Harrington. And, you know, I know I'm missing quite a few, it was very satisfying.
And as far as kind of leading into that, as far as the Ryder Cup, it's y'all having that in 2018?
Yes.
And do you have a big role with that as far as putting that on and kind of bringing that
well,
to France?
Well, listen, I was very involved up until the beginning of the year because I was put by the player from the European Tour on the board of directors of Ryder Cup Europe, Ryder Cup Limited. But I moved away at the beginning of this year.
Okay.
There's many, many reasons to that. But at the end of the day, you know, it's coming to France is already satisfying enough as a player, I will say, to know that it's, you know, coming to the country where I come from. Would I have a role in 2018? I do have a role on the French side, but. I can't tell you right now. I can't see that far ahead.
Gotcha. And the Ryder Cup will be played at the Albatross course at
Albatross. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to admit, I don't know much about the course. What can people expect come 2018? What kind of
Well, it's a huge test of golf. It's kind of an American layout where you still have to. There's quite a lot of water in play, but at the same time, it has a very linksy feel. So, when we play the French Open, we try to have as much as we can, because in the last 2 months we have had 400 millimeters of water falling down. So 40 centimeters, that's a lot of water, if you can imagine. Mm-hmm. So this year was playing softer. The greens were much more receptive, although they were drying out throughout the week. But usually you can play very fast. Now, the Ryder Cup being played at the end of September, it will be a little bit softer, and it will be playing quite long. I mean, although we can have a very good month of September, it can also be, quite chilly and it can rain. So it's a beast of a golf course. I mean, it's really a tough test. And you just have to look at the scores over the years. I think it's a wonderful, as well, match play golf course. When you play stroke play, there's so many trouble everywhere that you can always expect to have a nightmare sooner or later. In match play, you lose a hole and you go to the next. So I think it would be very good for the crowds and for what we're going to see. There's going to be a lot of attacking and then could be potentially a lot of birdies.
Now, you played in one Ryder Cup in 99,
yep.
Correct?
Yeah.
And so I just moved to Boston. So I live actually pretty close to Brookline where that occurred.
Yeah.
Have to ask you so that was a pretty acrimonious Ryder Cup, even in the lead up. I remember there were some press conferences.
Of course, yeah.
Some back and forth there, even before everything started and teed off. Were the galleries just brutal to you that week, or was it?
Well, I think it wasn't only to me. I think it was. But you know what? There was many reasons to it. First, the enthusiasm and people are behind their teams. There's no doubt. I think that the build-up was a bit too heavy. At the end of the day, everybody wants to win. But we got to remember that we're here to promote the game of golf, more importantly. Winning or losing, fine. It's everybody plays to win, as I say. But even when you lose, it's part of the game, actually. That's why we play games. If you only won, you wouldn't play a game anymore because you'd be bored.
So, in the spirit of the Ryder Cup too.
Yeah, and the spirit of the Ryder Cup is a friendly match between the two entities. So yes, there was a few things that we addressed, both sides and both boards of directors, and that we have changed. And there's no doubt that we've learned a lot from there. Europe was starting to, being a little bit more of a force, and it wasn't well perceived, and not by the players, but definitely the press played a big role in that, by building up and by, how should I say, probably motivate a little too much everybody, including the spectators, and it went overboard. So at the end of the day, you can only learn from the mistake that happened, and we have, and you look at the last Ryder Cups. It's been played in a very, I wouldn't say different spirit, because the players here play in a very amicable spirit, but it's been more guided.
Much more congenial, right?
Yes, totally.
Yeah.
I guess kind of staying on the topic of the Ryder Cup and more, maybe more generally, French golf. Are you close with any young French golfers? I know the one that probably we're most familiar with, just from him having spent more time over in the U.S., is Victor Dubuisson. But I was just wondering if you could, if you have a relationship with him or other younger guys. And, does obviously French golf would love to place a Frenchman on the Ryder Cup team in 2018. And I was just wondering kind of who you see might have the best chance at being that guy, or even a couple guys.
Well, it's very hard to say who will be in, but there's no doubt that Victor Dubuisson is a force to be reckoned with. He's an amazing player. He's really, in that league of player that has something special about him. Can he make the Ryder Cup? Yes, he can make the Ryder Cup. We've seen it. He played in Scotland into it, and he's not very far from making this one. So if he has a couple of good months here this summer, he could, he could definitely be part of it. Now, you know, you have other players like Levy, you have other players like Wattel, who just, you know, shot 7-under today and he's tying for 7 or 8 in Scotland. You have the other one that you've seen long ago, Grégory Bourdi, who was leading the U.S. Open at one stage in the second round. And, you know, there's the old guard and the new guard, and you have the very young ones who are just arriving, people like Longask, who just turned pro. He played, you've seen him at the Masters. He played four rounds there, made the cut. You know, he did the same.
He won the amateur, correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
So this guy is has tremendous potential, and you know, there are many others as well. Actually, some of them studied in university in America. You know, the Sordé and all the others. So there's ample opportunities for French to be in that team, or even two French to be in that team. Now it's a matter of you know it like I do. It's a long year. I mean, the process of Europe being based on 1 year, the year is very long, and the pressure. You know, you got to handle it all, and you got to make sure that the schedule that you're going to play really suits and is really focused on where, you know, what kind of course you like to play, what, you know, what time of the season your form is better than others, because it's a cycle. You know, some people play great at the spring, some other play great during summer, so you're going to make sure that you build it up and maximize what you're going to do. So do I have hope that we're going to see a French guy in the team in 2018? Absolutely.
As far as your career goes, what would you say the highlight of your career thus far has been?
The highlight of my career?
Mm-hmm.
It would be outside of golf. So you're talking about golf here?
Yes.
I guess. Listen, I don't know. You know, when I won on tour, I think when was that, in 93, I think it was. You know, I was the first Frenchman to win on the European Tour, qualifying for the Ryder Cup as well. The Open, obviously, whether it's the Open Championship or the French Open, you know, being in the playoff, being very close from, or having the two trophies that I cherish the most. But more importantly, I think it was, you know, being able to, through the game of golf, first of all, to have an amazing life, a very enriching life, and sharing the same passion with the thousands of people who are behind the ropes and following me at some occasions.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as that is
actually what is good. You know, it's to see how people support you and how behind you, no matter what happens, in the good time as well as in the bad times.
So, and I don't want to dwell on the bad times. Or they probably can't even be considered bad times because it's all relatively speaking, you're still, you know, in a playoff to win. But as far as disappointments go, would you put the French Open below or above the Open Championship at Carnoustie?
I would put them at the same level, really.
Really?
I lost both in the playoff. Yeah, the French. I played 25 of them, and I never hidden the fact that this was, you know, the tournament that I wanted to win no matter what. And I had a few chances, actually, some very good chances, but it never happened. So that was really hard. But at the same time, you know, it was hard. But 6 months earlier, I wasn't walking. If we talk about 2005, I came out of to full reconstruction of my right knee, and I was pretty blessed to be in that position, you know, 3 months after basically starting to play golf again. It was, you know what, at the end of the day, career, life, you have some joys, you have some disappointment. It's about, you know, handling them and looking at what's, you know, what the positive things that comes out of it. So,
going back,
I'm disappointed not to have my name on both of those trophies, no doubt. But the experience
to Carnoustie, and I guess just, you know, I feel like everybody, you're kind of frozen in a lot of people's minds at that point. You know, that's kind of what a lot of people in the States more or less remember about you. And I think that's a little bit unfair because you've had an excellent career and also you just handled that with such class. But I guess my two questions about Carnoustie would be, what did you do afterwards? Like immediately afterwards that night, do you just go open a really awesome bottle of wine and just say,
I did.
Hey,
I didn't open one, my friend. I had all my friends, my very close friends who came for the last couple of rounds. They were all here. I booked the largest table. I think we were 16 around the table, and we pretty much drank all the cellar of the hotel. So
awesome.
We had an excellent night. We invited the people from the RNA, and you know, I stayed there until 3 or 4, trying that would really calm me down. But an hour later, I was awake, so that didn't quite work. you need the adrenaline to come down.
Yeah.
You need to have all that drama that went around to as well sink in and come down. So yeah, the next week or so, I was home in the south of France, and I was at my house and trying to reflect on it and trying to rest the head, because no matter what, there's mixed emotion coming, and before you can have any judgment, I think you need to have your body and mind rest a little bit, or try to rest, and then you can start addressing things.
And as far as kind of taking a negative and turning it into a positive, was there anybody that reached out or anything that really surprised you in a positive way in the aftermath?
Yeah, there was
plenty
of people who reached out without any doubt. But as I say, I keep that for myself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Something.
Well, and then actually, you had a pretty successful year. I mean, really beyond that, you really had a pretty excellent run in major championships. Yeah. And then 99 and then really into 2000 as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was playing really well. And you know what? I really started to hit the wall a little bit because I was traveling back and forth all the time. 2000, I really played good golf all over the place. And 2001, well, obviously we know what happened in September. I mean, this tragic event in New York, and I think I needed something like $75,000 or close to that to keep my card, and I was starting to play extremely well. So obviously that didn't happen. We didn't play that week. And then the following week I came back. I mean, I spent one day, I was in Florida, I remember. I spent one week in Miami not being able to move anywhere. And I flew that following Monday and went back to Europe and thought, you know what, where is the world going? Nobody knew what was going to happen. So I thought, hey, I'm gonna play here in Europe. If anything is likely to happen, at least I can always maybe jump in the car or jump in the train or whatever. I can go back home and I can, be close to my family. So this is the option that I took. And the following week I finished second. I lost by one shot into a tournament in Europe. So I was really playing well. So that really put a stop to what I wanted to do in America.
Were you scheduled to play the I think it was the WGC
No, I was playing
that week?
I was playing the other one. I was playing the one in
Tampa Bay?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
But I think I still had 5 tournaments in hand, or 6 tournaments. So, I had plenty in it. I really, when I tell you I was playing well.
Mm-hmm. So you showed up at Augusta in 2000. You'd never seen the course before.
Yeah.
And you finished tied for 19th, which is probably one of the better debuts of anybody out there. What are your recollections?
Well, I
event?
I was when I knew I was going to play in the Masters, which is right after the Open, I went to see some of my friends, and I asked Olazabal and Ballesteros at the time if I could play a practice round with them. So I'm very close friend to Jose Maria, and obviously I knew Sevi pretty well as well. But so they say, sure, yeah, let's play together. So we put it down together that we were going to play on the Tuesday, and then on Wednesday I played another one with Bernard Lange. So we won as well the Masters twice. So if you're going to learn quickly from someone, you better learn from the best. So I try to get as many information as I could, and where the pin positions are going to be, and where's the side to be, where's the side not to be, et cetera, et cetera. So, again, it's putting has always been something that I enjoy, and my short game has always you know, normally is pretty well on. And I thought that, you know, I was very comfortable at Augusta. I could feel like, you know, this is the type of golf that I like, when you have to move the ball and move some of the shots and play in the right area. So I felt good. I felt comfortable. And I played pretty well.
No, you did. And then as far as, I mean, really, you played well in the cut at the Open, which I guess, was that the one at Pebble after that?
Yeah, I missed. I think I missed a cut at Pebble by one or something like. I think I missed a cut by one, but I wasn't playing very well.
Okay.
I scrambled pretty. I mean, you know, I chipped in a couple of times to stay alive. But the game wasn't really that good. I mean, I played much better in St Andrews, where after two rounds I was I was tying for eighth, I think. And I was playing pretty decent there.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I mean, he finished T31 at the Open, and then T30 at the PGA Championship.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, obviously, you talked about 2001, you know, September 11th. I'm kind of looking over your career, and then all of a sudden, in 2008, you finished T19 at the Open Championship. And
yeah, Brad Bergdale, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So what was the story behind that one?
Well, the story behind that one is that I was playing, you know, I played St. Andrews in 2005, and again, I was playing very well, but my leg, you know, coming out of two surgery, was still extremely weak, and I had many sessions where my knee was dislocating, really, at the shot, especially when I was hitting some drives, you know, you could hit the, basically the fibula is moving forward, as of the bottom of the leg is not really, so it was really, really, you know, the leg was too weak, let's put it this way. But in 2009, you know, that's where I started to feel much, much better. And I went to qualify next door. I remember, I don't know if I won the qualifying, I can't remember, but I was pretty close. And then I went to play, that following day, but I playing, you know, links golf is always something that I learned to enjoy anyway, and with the years I really loved it. It's a different type of game. You gotta hit so many different shots, and you gotta try to, you know, minimize not so much the mistakes, but it's very hard to hit it close, so you gotta be grinding it out all day long, and that's the beauty about the Open Championship. When the weather gets bad, it gets really nasty.
Mm-hmm.
And having said that, you know, I enjoy that. In Bergdale, the weather was absolutely horrendous for the 4 days. And it blew like incredible how hard the wind was. But yeah, finished 19th with a terrible third round. I mean, the third round we had to stop a couple of times. Not stop, they didn't stop officially, but I remember playing with Ian Poulter, and the ball wasn't standing still on the greens at a couple of occasions on the back nine. So that was a brutal day. I think I shot 80 or 81, I can't really remember. And despite that, you know, I finished 19th, so tells you how tough the conditions were.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, John, you've been very gracious with your time. We don't want to keep you too long. I'm sure you're heading out to dinner. I did. If you will allow me, I have one non-golf question for you that I was curious about. I know you split your time between Paris and Hong Kong, and now coming over here to the States. I imagine you're in the air a lot and in a car a lot. I was just wondering, kind of how you like to pass that time. If you're a big reader, or if you watch movies, or just kind of curious what you're into.
I listen. I like everything. I like any music, any type of music. I like to watch movies as well, which is a good thing in an airplane. I do read, and I'm a bulimic for working. So, you know, whichever project I work on, because, you know, the French Open takes a lot of my time, but I work on a lot of different projects as well with different partners and different things. So I'm a workaholic. So I, you know, I have, basically, I don't get bored too often.
Favorite French wine region?
Favorite, Bordeaux.
Okay. Left or right bank?
Good question. What do you have to choose?
That's a good answer.
Reading. What's wrong with you?
Favorite European tour.
I mean, really. I mean, you're going to tell me, you're going to take a Petrus, you're going to take a Cheval Blanc, which is right bank, and then you're going to put on the other side a La Tour, Aubryon, and what can I tell you?
My wife's middle name is Margot. So
you saw beautiful Chateau, great place.
Yeah.
Okay, so both. I stay in the middle of the island there, in the water.
Okay.
What's the other question?
Favorite European tour stop besides the French Open?
The Open Championship.
Okay, that's fair. Cathay Pacific or Air France, back and forth from Paris to Hong Kong?
No comment.
And then anybody you would recommend that we have on, either on the Champions Tour or the European Tour, European Senior Tour on the podcast next?
Let me think a little bit. Some of them are not 50 yet. I don't know. Tommy Almo III, Billy Andrade.
Okay.
Billy Andrade, no doubt. David Trost. On the European side, my friend Remezi, who's playing on the Champions Tour, the other French guy here, is completely mad, so it would be entertaining. Yeah, we know each other since we're 13, so I can say that.
Okay.
comes to my mind.
Okay, well, excellent. Well, and then lastly, you're wearing a beret this week. Beret or visor? You've always had some pretty good hair.
Well, actually, the visor that I was expecting arrived yesterday or the day before.
Okay.
So I was wearing a visor and I usually wear a visor. But, yeah, the beret is a bit of a French touch there.
I gotcha. Right, you got anything else? Yeah, thank you.
We'll let you go. Thank you so much.
You take care, all right?
Yeah.
See you soon.
Excellent. Thank you, John.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye-bye.
How nice is the spot for that track drop?
Drop this and ziplock that. Right on my waistline is why I kept that strap.
Yeah.
I remember nights, I didn't remember nights. I damn near went crazy, I had to get it right. Now I'm your favorite rapper's favorite rapper. Hey, now I'm your favorite trapper's favorite trapper. The absolute truth, yeah, no joke. Who